Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe in myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Number 30 minus one, Mike. Episode 29 of the Last Round. Once again, another week of fights, another week of previews, another week of reviews, another week of breaking news. Which just happened, actually. Once again, I'm Danny Z with my co-host Michael Shepard right across from me here in the studios in Southern California. We got a lot of stuff going on this weekend. We got a lot of fights coming up in the next month. May's pretty stacked with fights. June stacked with fights. The whole summer, man. But once again, we've been on a good guest roll in terms of getting some guests on the last couple weeks, because for a while we were just kind of doing our own thing and just talking about the fights. We got another one this week, Mike. Who's on the line right now?
And this week we've got a big guest in terms of a heavyweight.
The heavyweight.
The Andy Ruiz Jr. on the line.
How's it going, Andy?
Hey, how's it going? I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. We appreciate you calling in. And Mike, who's he fighting? He's fighting on the next edition of the PBC card, right?
Yeah, he's fighting this week, April 20th, on the Danny Garcia undercard against Alexander Dmytrenko, who's 41-4. Andy's currently 31-1.
Currently. And then, you know, just because, as I mentioned at the beginning, Andy, you know, this boxing world, I'm sure, like, you know, since being a professional fighter, there's always news breaking, there's always something popping up, and this just popped up within the last hour, 2 hours or so. And you being a heavyweight, and especially in your last fight last July, you called this guy out. I don't know if you've heard about it, but Jarrell Big Baby Miller has reportedly tested positive for a banned substance in his fight leading up to Anthony Joshua in June. Have you heard about that? What's your take on it? You know, especially as a heavyweight fighter in the division right now.
Yeah, you know what? That's funny that you mentioned that, because I was scrolling through my Instagram and I seen that he tested positive. And you know, he's a big guy. I don't see why he should be using those types of stuff. You know, I don't know if he needed. I don't know if he didn't have confidence in himself or whatnot, but, you know, I even wrote Eddie Hearns to let me fight him if the fight gets canceled after I get past Alexander the April 20th. But, you know, it kind of sucks for Baby Miller.
You'd be ready for that quick a turnaround, fighting in April and then taking the Joshua fight in June at MSG?
Yeah, I think I'll be ready. God willing, everything goes good for this fight on this Saturday, April 20th at the Dignity Health Center on Fox. I think I'm confident that everything will go good, and hopefully they will give me that title shot. Sooner than I thought.
Right. What does it say? You know, in terms of Jarrell Miller, especially, you know, leading up to this fight, promoting this fight at the press conferences, the kickoff press conferences, he was the one accusing Joshua and Anthony Joshua of taking all these banned substances, saying he was a cheater and all that stuff. He was the one holding that big microphone, saying all that stuff, and look at what happens. I mean, what do you think about something like that?
I don't know. I think karma's a B, you know. I don't think somebody should be talking like that if you know that you're doing those stuff. But, you know, it sucks for Gerald Miller. And hopefully AJ gets a good opponent. And hopefully they pick me, you know, after the 20th. But, you know, it kind of sucks.
You're still looking to become the first Mexican heavyweight champion. You're looking back to your fight against Joseph Parker, I thought, you know, on that day, I thought you'd got it.
Yeah, you know, I look back, but I feel I should have done a lot of more I think if I would have threw my hands more and been more active, I think I'm sure I would have got the win. But, you know, things happen. I learned from my mistakes, and I'm still young. I'm still fresh. Never been really hurt or anything. So, you know, I'm still driving to become the first Mexican heavyweight champion of the world.
How's training going for this fight this upcoming Saturday, Andy? How's sparring been going? How's, you know, the everything that evolves into training camp? How's it been going so far?
You know, everything's been going good. Having Manny Robles and Estrellita on my corner, having my chef, my conditioning coach. You know, everything's been going good. Been training hard, been staying focused. You know, just been training hard and, you know, just happy that I'm back in the ring, that I signed a new contract with PBC, with Al Heyman, thanks to them. You know, we got a big schedule lined up for this year. So, but first I gotta get passed through Alexander Dmitrenko, and you know, God willing, we're gonna win.
I saw on your social media you had a $100 bet with Manny Robles. Can you just tell us all what that was about?
Yeah, what's the bet about, Andy?
Oh, it was that from when we started camp. I hit a goal. You know, I was at 255, so I said I was gonna be there at 255. So we just made it like a little bet like that, but it was nothing serious. But I was $100 richer.
It's always good.
It's always good. So, you know, like Mike touched on a few minutes ago, your only loss was against Joseph Parker, which is, I believe, in 2016. What did you learn from that? And especially now, essentially 3 years later, you know, because that's, like you said, that's your only loss you've ever had, you know, in 30, yeah, you know, in over 30 fights, you've only had that one loss. What did you learn after that fight?
Just to stay disciplined, man. Stay disciplined, stay focused, stay hungry. A lot of people don't know the back scenes of the training camp that I had for Joseph Parker, them switching the dates of them, that it was going to be here in the United States or it was going to be in his hometown. So I kind of lost focus a little bit, but you know, now that, I learned from that mistakes and that I'm more hungry, more motivated, and just to stay busy, you know, stay busy. This is one in a lifetime shot in my career. I want to make history. I want to bring back the belt to Mexico. There's never been a Mexican heavyweight champion of the world. So my goal, my dream is to accomplish that. And working hard and staying disciplined, I will accomplish that.
Has the move from Top Rank to PBC, has that been a good driving force? Because from 2016 to 2018, there was a big gap.
Yeah, it's a blessing, man. I'm really happy. You know, God had he had a plan, and I'm glad that this was a plan. Going with PBC, they already have all these fights lined up for me. Good opponents, good events. So they're gonna expose me more. So the main thing is I just got to stay ready, stay focused, stay busy, and stay in shape. So you know, I control my destiny, like people tell me. So I just got to be ready.
Are you going to be in attendance at the Wilder Brazil fight, like right there ringside, maybe, you know, just to, you know, give a little promo and everything, just in case?
Yep, I sure will, man. I'm going to be there at that fight. Me and Dominic's been sparring before he left. Manny Robles, we've been sparring, and you know, best of luck for Dominic Brazil. It's going to be a really hard fight. But, you know, anything could happen in the heavyweight division. Only takes one shot to change the fight. So, but I will be attending that fight and be scouting out, see how they do.
Looking at the top three heavyweights that everyone talks about, obviously your Fury, your Wilder, and your Joshua. Which one would you say stylistically would match best for you?
I think the best, I've done so many interviews and I say the same thing. I think Joshua, his style, I think, will benefit me the most. I know, Wilder's with PBC, and we can make that fight as well. But I think Joshua is more vulnerable, and I think I'll be able to take him out faster than the other ones.
So you mentioned at the beginning of the interview that you messaged Eddie Hearn. You messaged Eddie Hearn saying, "Hey, you know, I'm here, you know, to take the spot of Jarrell Miller."
Matter of fact, I just messaged them like 30 minutes ago when I found out right now. That's funny that you asked me right now. I just messaged them like 30, 40 minutes ago, and I told them if everything goes good for April 20th, I'll be ready for June 1st or whatever date, if it's the same or whatnot. But, you know, I told them to give me the opportunity. I'll be ready, and I think it'll be a hell of a fight.
We're backing you, Andy. we'll put it out on all our social media. We'll push it out for you.
You know, I mean, do you think, just, you know, obviously there's still more details coming out, but I think Eddie Hearn's already acknowledged it online, saying that the substance was found, right? So something was found, and, you know, I'm sure there's
Something was found, but, you know, if they don't cancel it, you know, good for Jarrell Miller. You know, that was a good fight for him. I wanted to see that fight as well, but you know, but first I don't want to look past myself. I want to stay ready and stay focused for Alexander Dmitrenko, and we'll see from there.
So you mentioned you're with Manny Robles now. Before you were with Abel Sanchez, right?
Correct.
What would you say is the biggest difference between Manny Robles and Abel Sanchez?
Manny Robles, you know, there's just it benefited me a lot to be there with Manny Robles because of the speed, the quick movements. He makes me move my head, the speed. He does mitts. When I was over there with Abel Sanchez, it was kind of like a one-dimensional fighter, you know. I was just throwing two punches. I think that's what I lacked on the Joseph Parker fight. We didn't do no mitts. We didn't do a lot of movement. I think that's what benefits me a lot, you know, working the speed. So I needed a trainer that does a lot, that works on the speed a lot, the head movement, the feet movement. So I could do all those abilities. And, you know, like I said, God had a plan, and I'm happy that where I'm at right now.
That sounds like a good change, because watching you fight, Andy, you're definitely, you know, for a heavyweight, you've probably got some of the quickest hands.
Yeah, and, you know, the better shape that I am, the faster the hands are going to be. You know, I'm not where I want to be, but I'm better where I was at. So the main thing is to stay focused, stay busy, stay hungry, and, you know, sky's the limit.
I think, like you touched on before, I think the Anthony Joshua fight for you, you know, dreaming the matchup in my head, you definitely have more of a natural boxing IQ. You know, you've got some fast hands, and, you know, Joshua's more of a man-made fighter, should we say.
Yeah, I agree.
Andy Ruiz Jr. joins us, heavyweight contender. He fights Alexander Dmitrenko from the Dignity Health Sports Park in Carson, California, here in Southern California, this Saturday on Fox. I mean, yeah, like you said, I think it's very intriguing that you've already reached out to Eddie Hearn in terms of getting the Joshua fight. And, you know, I know we're focusing a lot on that, and it's not saying that you're looking past your opponent this Saturday, of course, because you still have a job to do. How many times did you fight last year? If you hypothetically speaking, if you did get this Joshua fight in June, would this be like one of the quickest turnarounds you've had in the last couple years in terms of from one fight to the next?
Yeah, it sure will, man. And, you know, I fought two times last year from the difficulties that we had with Top Rank and all that. I think that's what I was lacking of opponents, and we couldn't really figure out what was going to happen, and they wanted me to re-sign with them, but I wasn't really happy. So I think that's what took a long time out of me, but you know what, it was really worth it waiting. And you know, now I'm back in action, and it'll be a blessing if that happens, if I get that, if Eddie Hearns would be interested in doing that. But if not, you know, I got to work my way up and get back in the rankings and, you know, get some rounds in since of the little long layoff that I had.
Was there any other promotions that reached out to you, Andy, when you signed for the PBC?
Yeah, well, when I got out of the contract with Top Rank, I had a lot of different promotion companies that wanted to sign me, but the best deal that I got and for me, the best deal was with Al Haymon. You know, he takes care of his fighters. He gives them fights, makes them stay busy, and, you know, they have a really good plan for me for this year and next year, so I went with my gut, and I went with them.
Do you know how many times you should be looking at, you know, fighting this year?
This year, God willing, I should be fighting like 3 times this year.
When's the last time you fought 3 times in a year?
Probably 2016.
Okay, so the year when you fought Joseph Parker.
Yep.
Would you, do you think, I mean, I'm assuming they're still going to keep the date, right, Mike? They're still probably going to keep the date for Joshua if Jerome Miller gets out of there, because I've heard they've already sold 16,000 tickets or something. Have you ever fought at MSG, Andy?
No, I haven't.
So that would be not just fighting, you know, in such a big card like that, but, you know, that would be huge for anybody, you know, just to say the least, but that would be huge for you to be able to fight at Madison Square Garden in the main event of a heavyweight matchup, right?
Yeah, that would be a blessing, like I said. But if not, you know, I'm not scared to work my way up there. Like I said, we already have big plans for this year. For me, Al Haymon has big plans. So, you know, I'm just excited that I'm back in action. And you know, I'm excited to get back in the rankings and show the people what I'm about.
So you mentioned that you want to become the first you know, Mexican American heavyweight champion of the world. I believe if I'm not mistaken, I believe the last one to come close to do it was Chris Arreola, who's also a promotional stablemate of yours. Have you ever had conversations with Chris Arreola about, you know, how he was coming up, especially when he fought Klitschko at the Staples Center out here? And he, oh, 'cause he was right there. He was as close as you could get. Have you ever had conversations with him about, you know, advice in terms of your career or anything like that?
Yeah. You know, I know Chris Arreola since I was 16 years old. I've been sparring with him since I was young. You know, we're really good friends, and, you know, yeah, he has come across, fighting for the world title 2 times, I believe, or 3 times. And, you know, but I think I'm a different fighter than Chris Arreola. I could say I'm more better, you know, but maybe it would be an exciting fight, being a fight with me and him, maybe later on this year. Who knows?
So what would Chris Arreola say if he heard you say that right now, saying, "Oh, I'm better than him"? What would his reaction be?
I think he'll believe it. I'm not trying to say nothing bad about him, you know.
Right.
I have a lot of respect for him, but out of the confidence that I have in me, and I know my abilities and what I could do, you know, I am the better fighter, but for the fight fans, they would love to see that fight with me and him fight maybe this year.
I was thinking about that. I could definitely see that later this year because, you know, Chris just fought on the Mikey Garcia Errol Spence card. He got the
belt. He looked good. Yeah, he looked good too. You know, there's never been 2 Mexican heavyweights in action. There's never been a 2 Mexican heavyweights fight. So I think that would be a really good fight between me and him. But first, I got to get past Alexander on April 20th, and we'll see what happens then.
Would you put that fight in Southern California, I'm assuming, since it's big Mexican market?
Yep, I think we'll sell out at the Staples Center or back up right here at the Dignity Health Center.
That's great. Well, hopefully you end up getting the Joshua fight. I'm sure that's, you know, being local to us, I'm sure we'd love to see you get the big Joshua fight in June.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the that'll be a good fight. But you know, like I said, if it doesn't happen, I still got to work myself up there and get some rounds in, and you know, get back in action and staying focused and staying ready.
And then, really quick on the main event of your card this Saturday, you're on the undercard of Danny Garcia and Adrian Granados, who are fighting for the vacant WBC silver welterweight title. What do you think about that fight, Andy, in terms of Garcia versus Granados?
You know, I think it's going to be a good fight, but I got to give it to my man, Danny Garcia. I think he's gonna pull it off. I think it's going to be a good fight, but in my eyes and in my mentality, I got to go in there and steal the show. So I got to go in there and perform good. And, you know, best of luck to Danny Garcia.
That's awesome. Well, Andy, you know, we appreciate it. We know this is technically a fight week for you, so you're probably going to be busy, especially the next couple days with the press and a lot of press conferences and everything. So we appreciate you taking a few minutes to call in. So go ahead and you know, promote your fight, promote your social media, promote anything you got coming up, upcoming companies, businesses. Go for it. The floor is yours, man.
Yeah, thank you, man. Thanks for having me. It was a honor, you know, and tune in, you guys, April 20th at the Dignity House Center, April 20th on Fox Sports. Just want to thank all my sponsors, Zoe's Meals, Vintage VDB, all my fans, all my raza, the Latinos out there. And follow me on Instagram on Destroyer_13, Destroyer13. And thanks a lot, buddy. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Andy.
Thanks, Andy.
Good luck on Saturday, man.
Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
We got a lot of boxing coming up this weekend, man. We got the Zones back again. We got PBC Saturday, ESPN pay-per-view. You know, what a crazy man. Like, because, you know, for our listeners out there, I was on my way here to the studio and Mike shoots me a text saying that Jarrell Miller got popped, tested positive for this substance, which was, what is it actually called?
According to this, GW1516.
What is that, a robot?
I don't know, but from what we can see by Googling it,
it's an endurance stamp. Like,
yeah, it's some kind of endurance / fat stripper, but it also helps muscle growth. So if what they say is true, it's from a test on March the 20th. Dan Raphael was the one who broke the news. He tested positive in a VADA testing. It was a urine test submitted on March 20th. So if this is true, he's just done himself out of a $6 million payday.
Man, oh my God. Do you think, I honestly think it's, I mean, because, you know, obviously there's something in the contract, a clause saying, hey, you know, if either fighter tests positive or gets popped, the other side has a right to, you know, find another opponent. I'm pretty sure there's something in there. You know what? I think he lost his opportunity, man. I mean, I'm sure they're going to say, hey, test the B sample.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, when's the last time that the B sample was tested and it didn't come back the same?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, come on, man. All that crap he was talking leading up to this fight, and then accusing Joshua that he was on the juice and all that stuff. And look at what happens.
It's crazy. I mean, I'm just hoping, like I kind of spoke to you outside, is, you know, Eddie Hearn last time when Pulev, that fight fell through. He already had, you know, Carlos Takam in the background,
yeah,
on standby. So hopefully he's, you know, they've got a good few weeks. What is it, about 8 weeks, 10 weeks until the actual
give
fight?
Give or take, yeah.
So hopefully he's either got somebody on standby or somebody who's fighting around now, like, you know, Andy Ruiz Jr., you know, the winner of, you know, maybe even Dave Allen, Lucas Brown, Chisora, Sanad Gashi. You know, there's plenty of people who I'm sure with this amount of time would, you know, willingly step in because, you know, he's a huge, huge payday.
You think this is going to affect the ticket sales? You think they'll offer refunds? I think they're going to have to.
I think they may offer refunds, you know, but the British fans, I'm sure, of those, if they've bought the ticket, they've probably already bought the flight.
No, you're right. Yeah. So, I mean, but that's the thing with, like, especially combat sports, is like, you know, you buy tickets to these fights and but, like, literally up until maybe fight week, like, it's always difficult to know if you're going to actually see that fight because something could happen. Injuries, yeah. You could test positive for some banned substance. I mean, I don't know. I think Miller lost his shot, man. It's like Povetkin all over again a couple years ago. Remember when he was supposed to fight Wilder? And he got popped and lost his shot. That Wilder sues him in court. But, I mean, you know, Povetkin still got some big fights after that. He fought Joshua. And he gave Joshua a pretty good fight. He lost, but he gave him probably the toughest fight up until that point.
Or maybe, old man Luis Ortiz is still around.
Hey, you know what? How crazy would that be if, I mean...
He recently fought.
Yeah, how crazy would that be if Ortiz got in there? You know what? If Andy Ruiz gets in there, you know what? That was very like breaking news. He was like, "Oh, I messaged mm-hmm. Eddie Hearn about 30, 40 minutes ago saying, hey, you know, if I, assuming I get the win on this weekend, I'm ready. Throw me in there in June." That's huge, man. That's big news.
Not just because we've had him on the phone. I honestly do think he would be problems for Joshua. Like I said to him, if you watch Andy Ruiz, you can see that he knows boxing well. He's more of a natural. He can just think on, you know, during a fight, he can just think and, you know, break things down.
He
can,
the natural.
Whereas Joshua, you can see a lot of the combinations that he throws are just stuff that he's had, you know, robotically put into him from weeks and weeks of training. But Andy Ruiz, I can imagine he can change it up, switch, you know, do different things, think on the, whilst he's in the ring, you know, break things down.
That'd be crazy if he gets it, man. I'm pulling for him. I'm pulling for him. But you know what, though? I'm actually more excited about the Chris Arreola fight. If that actually happens, two Mexican-American heavyweights like that, when, especially when he said, oh, yeah, no, we know each other since we were like teenagers or something. I was like, what? So he's like, yeah, if you could put us both together out here in Southern California. I was like, that's pretty cool. Like, I thought that was kind of exciting news, too. So
another fight for L.A.?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, where are they going to put it? Where else they could put it? You know, they could... You could probably do some pretty good, you know, attendance at maybe the StubHub.
Ariola's never really in, you know, too bad of a fight.
No, yeah, he puts out the action. Yeah. He puts out the action, and then I think they're both the types of fighters, you know, Mexican American, and you know, what they would go in there and be like, hey, you know, we gotta throw down and throw it out there for everybody, especially being Mexican American heavyweights.
Yeah.
So that'd be huge. That'd be huge because I mean, obviously all the most entertaining fights over the years in terms of Mexican versus Mexican have been in the lower weight classes, mm-hmm. you know, Morales, Barrera, stuff like that.
And they have to go out on the Shield.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think they would. Like that. I think they would do it too, yeah. which is insane. But, you know, moving on, fight reviews from this past weekend, starting on Friday, April 12th, from the Staples Center out here in Los Angeles, California, on ESPN Plus, the app. Vasily Lomachenko stops in... The punch didn't even look...
Stops in round three and round four.
Round three and four. Shout out to Jack Reese, referee Jack Reese. Vasily Lomachenko just, with that right compact hook, stops Anthony Crolla. I feel like sometimes I would say Corolla. It's Crolla. and Lomachenko retains his WBA and WBO lightweight world titles. And like you mentioned, Crolla was down in rounds three and four, which round four was obviously the conclusion of the fight. Round three, Lomachenko had him against the ropes, and the referee at that point,
Jack Reese,
who's a prominent referee, and especially in the California Commission,
probably one of the best in the game.
Yeah, probably one of the best in the game. You know, watching it, you know, Mike was there, you know, representing the last round right there ringside for us. And you said that it looked like he stopped it, right?
I was looking straight at it from where I was. Crolla was on the left of me on the ropes. Lomachenko was to the right, and I could see Jack Reese straight in front of me. And you could see Jack Reese was saying something to Crolla, like, you know, you're going to have to defend yourself. You're going to have to hit back, or I'm going to stop it. He took some more punishment. Jack Reese stepped in. Looked like he stopped it. Lomachenko went over to the corner to celebrate. Crolla just looked at him and was like, what the hell?
Yeah,
you know, kind of started.
Why'd you stop the fight?
Yeah, started complaining straight away that he'd stopped it. Jack Reese looked kind of confused, and then next thing you know, he's kind of saying, "Oh no, it was a standing count because the ropes saved him from going down." And I'm thinking, I don't think he did because he wasn't leaning on the ropes. He wasn't like halfway out the ring. So I, like we just touched on, Jack Reese is one of the best in the game, especially what he did to Tyson Fury, where he actually jumped on
gave
him,
gave
him the chance to get back up. That was a very good piece of refereeing. I honestly thought he dropped the ball that day. And to be honest with you, he should have been stopped because in the next round he took a lot more punishment and got knocked out.
Yeah, so. It was bad. It was bad. And a lot of people were saying after that final punch that it was a right hook. It was very compact. People were saying like, oh, you know, that wasn't even a hard shot. He got him right on the temple.
Yeah.
And Corolla was already taking a lot of damage. So his stamina was down, everything. And then it looked like he was already kind of like...
He was groggy when he...
Yeah, he was already groggy. So that was just that shot was just placed in the perfect spot. And it had the perfect amount of power behind it to just drop him. And he just face planted. And then speaking of Jack Reese and ESPN, this is the first time they debuted the bow tie cam.
Mm-hmm.
Which is actually, that's very cool. That's one of the best camera shots I've ever seen, especially when Corolla turned over when he was on the floor.
It was a bit raw, though. It was raw. I liked it.
Monday
I was
Night
kind of
raw.
Thinking to myself, if Corolla's family is watching this or some of his close friends, it was very kind of...
That was very, what's the word we're looking for?
Raw and uncut.
Raw and uncut, the Anthony Corolla story. So... But I that was a cool camera angle, though.
It was. Just, I think maybe sometimes for the knockouts, delay it a few seconds and watch it before letting us see it, because, you know, it was cool, but his family and friends, I'm sure, weren't too pleased, because he was groggy. He looked kind of out of there.
Who did I pick last week? I think we both went Lomachenko, right?
You have to go Lomachenko on that.
Yeah. I was hoping, because you said there was a lot of Brits there, right?
Yeah, they had a good support. I saw a big group of them with a flag that I put on the Twitter from Manchester, which is where Crawler's from. There's good support, really. Coming all the way from the UK, all the way to the West Coast.
Yeah, they did it. They came out in droves. So following the fight, Lomachenko calls out Mikey Garcia, who just suffered his first loss against Errol Spence by moving up two weight divisions from 135 to 147 and fighting... essentially the boogeyman in 147 pounds. Lomachenko, you know, made it known he wants Mikey Garcia, which I really don't think is going to happen. I hope it does. I hope I'm wrong. I'm trying to throw, like, negativity in there to make it seem like doubters, like, oh, it's not going to happen. So they prove us wrong. So it's like reverse psychology. You get it? So, you know, and then they interviewed Bob Arum after the fight as well. And Bob Arum talked about that he would match up Lomachenko with, you know, Olympic medalist Luke Campbell, probably in England somewhere, for the WBC title if Mikey vacates it, which I don't think he's going to vacate. But, you know, it seems like Bob Arum already has some strategic, you know, pathways in his mind that he's going through. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I'd love to see Mikey and Loma. That'd be a great fight. Probably whoever wins that's the best at 135, I would say. If Mikey vacates, he fights Luke Campbell, Bob said, over in the UK, which would then lead to...
That'd be huge.
Which would then lead to Teofimo Lopez fighting Richard Comey for the IBF, and then potentially Loma v. Teofimo Lopez, if obviously they both win those fights, fighting sometime after the Super Bowl in 2020. And obviously that would be for the undisputed 135, and then Teofimo Lopez will move up to 140 after that fight.
Is it true that at the fight, you know, this past Friday, the Lomachenko fight at Staples Center, is it true that Teofimo Lopez tried to get in the ring after the fight? Because I saw some...
Teofimo went the other way. He sat ringside when the Loma fight was on and played on his phone the whole time.
What?
Sat next to Mike Coppinger, and Coppinger turned to him after the finish and sort of said, like, hey, what did you think of that performance? And he's like, oh, I don't know, I didn't watch it. So
he's
I think
that
was purposely.
Swagger, man.
Because when people were there, they were asking him, you know, Steve Kim asked him in an interview, like, are you here on a scouting mission, you know, for Lomachenko? And he's like, no, I'm not scouting him. I'm just here, you know, to support Top Rank,
to hang
to do
out.
Publicity for myself. I don't need to do a scouting report.
It's the swagger, man. He's doing it.
He looked very confident. Obviously, I spoke to him, asking him, you know, to come on the podcast in the future. So he's confident. I don't think he comes across as arrogant. So I'd like to see that fight, whether it's going to come to fruition. I don't know, because, you know, he keeps saying that there's only so long his body's going to let him make 135.
No, he's right. Yeah, because he's technically a big kid.
He is big when you see him.
So move him up to 140 and put him against Mikey at 140.
That'd be a good.
Hey, you never know. Yeah. People are talking about Lomachenko Mikey, which is, you know, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
But maybe you might throw, you never know. Like at a left field, like what? Teofimo versus Mikey? You never know, man. You never know. Moving on that card, Gilberto Ramirez makes his light heavyweight debut at 175 pounds and gets the 40th win of his career. against Tommy Carpensi after Carpensi's corner stopped the bout after round four. Gilberto Ramirez, 40-0, undefeated. He had a world title, 168 pounds, for over 2 years. Tell me something.
Does he have the most padded record in the whole of boxing?
Oh, man.
That's a question.
He needs to fight a name next. But he said there's talk of Callum Smith, that he'd move back down to 168. Eddie Hearn and Bob Arum done interviews saying they're open to it. They think it'd be a great fight. I mean,
he was pictured at the Wildcard Gym with Callum Smith, wasn't he, before the fight?
Yeah.
Because he's now trained by, how do you pronounce it? Is it Julian Chua?
I think so. I think that's how I heard it.
That's who Jimbo Arrears' coach is at the minute. And if you look on his social media, you can see a picture of him and Callum Smith, I think, the week before the fight.
Yeah, I saw that picture.
Kind of promoting. So we'll just have to see, because obviously Ramirez is not.
I hope it happens.
The problem I think Gilberto Ramirez has is I think Callum Smith will beat him. And at light heavyweight, I think Benabiev will beat him. I think The Nail will beat him. I think Kovalev will beat him. I think Bivol will beat him. And I think Callum Johnson would beat him.
75 is stacked right now.
I honestly don't see where he's going to go, because he either stays at 168 and keeps fighting a lot of nobodies just to stack his record.
Unless he moves down to 160.
The problem he has is the problem his promotion has is he has good backing.
Oh, yeah,
He came into a great reception at the Staples Center. You know, the Mexicans love him. But now he's got to the point of they're going to have to match him against some real talent. And to me, he's very, you know, kind of like middle of the roadish. Like if you had to score everything out of 10, you know, he's got like 6 for power, 7 for this. He's not great at anything.
Right.
I don't think he's got great power. He hasn't got great feet. He's not got great speed. He doesn't put combinations together. He's kind of very methodical.
Right.
So I think if he goes up to that next level, I think he's going to get beaten. So I don't know whether they just go for a big fight and cash out. You know, take like a Kovalev or, you know, maybe a Bivol or a Beterbiev, you know, try and get some of that money and then cash out. Or do they go over to England, fight Callum Smith for all the titles at the 168 undisputed?
I think he should. I don't think there's
headline Wembley or the O2.
There's no more marinating here and fighting these guys. Like, I mean, there's not. No. There's not. He needs a name now. Like, you can't. He's overdue for a name. He needed a name like 5-6 fights ago. Probably even longer before that. He needs a name now. Like, I say you just go for Callum Smith. Go find him in England. Do it.
Yeah. He's padded his record for a long time, and now he kind of has to step up.
I mean, like, I hope that if he fights like a Callum Smith or like one of these, you know, bigger names, like, I hope he puts up a fight. And, you know, part of me wants him to win to show, like, people, like, yeah, you know, I'm the real deal. Because that's, like, you're right. That's the criticism that he's getting, is that he's 40-0, and he has no names on his resume.
Did you see Carpensi walk to the ring with a black eye?
Didn't you say that his brother gave it to him or something?
Yeah, the Top Rank sent something out saying that I think he got it from his brother in sparring that week. So kind of strange that he's sparring the week before the fight. But.
Well, I mean, he was just trying to get prepared, I guess, but it obviously didn't work. And then moving on, the guest we had the week before, Arnold Barboza Jr., stops Mike Alvarado in the third round. Did Alvarado announce he was retiring? Because it just looked bad.
He looked slow. Barboza looked powerful. You know, he didn't have many. I think he only had, 20-7 stoppages before the fight. We kind of predicted it going into the late rounds.
That's what we thought.
Unanimous decision. He went in there. He had some good pop. He just jumped at it, really. I think he saw that, you know, he was going to be too quick for Alvarado and just went in there and did exactly what he needed to do. He just went in there, blew him away, made a statement in probably the biggest fight, the biggest name he's fought. So, you know, on to bigger and better things, and hopefully he gets the Jose Ramirez fight like we've all been asking for.
Hey, that'd be exciting. Barboza and Ramirez. Yeah. But who knows?
Probably in Fresno.
You know what? He would do it. He'd go up there and do it. Yeah. I mean, might as well. You know, Ramirez draws a big crowd there. It works. So why not? Why not? Make it as big as you can get it. Also, moving on, Saturday the 13th from a Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City. Atlantic City is just getting the fights again. It feels like the 90s. New Jersey on Showtime. The most prominent female fight in recent history. Clarissa Shields gets the unanimous decision win over Christina Hammer and unifies the IBF, the WBA, the WBC, the WBO, and the vacant WBC Diamond and Ring Magazine titles. Undisputed. What'd you think of the fight? We both picked Clarissa Shields to win, or didn't we?
No, you picked Hammer.
Yeah. You picked Hammer. I picked Clarissa. I'm telling you, I just thought that I just thought Shields was just too much. You know, I didn't think there was going to be a knockout, but, you know, that could be because of the whole 2 minute round thing. But
Clarissa Shields, she definitely looked better since moving to John David Jackson. I thought she looked like she had a better jab. She had a good game plan. Christina Hammer looked like she really came in with just one game plan. And when her jab wasn't working, after Shields had kind of got her jab down and she just kept slipping it, Hammer had no idea what to do. She had no plan B, no plan C. So after that, really, she was just clocking up rounds, round after round. Round 8, she kind of rocked her. And the women should definitely go to 3 minute rounds, because I think in that 8th round, if she had a minute longer, I think Shields would have got Christina Hammer out of there. You know, because the problem she has now is she's 9-0 with only, I think, 2 KOs. And even then, she hasn't knocked anybody down. They've been stopped on the feet.
She's been knocked down.
She's been knocked down herself. Hannah Gabriel's knocked her down, but Shields has never knocked anybody out. They've always been TKOs.
It could be because of the whole 2 minute round things. It just goes by quick.
But that's the problem, is that, like we've touched on a few times, you know, when we've had female guests in, like Sonisha Estrada, is that, you know, guys and, you know, fight fans in general, they go in there because they want to see the blood, the guts. They want to see a knockout.
The blood and guts.
So with the women's fights always going, you know, 10 rounds, 12 rounds, because they're only 2 minutes, I think it's going to draw more eyes if they eventually move them to 3 minute rounds. But, you know, we've been saying that for some time now.
Who knows? I mean,
hopefully they do, you know, with the fights getting bigger and bigger, and, you know, Clarissa Shields could be more of a name. Hopefully she starts campaigning for that, and then eventually people listen.
They put a lot of promotion into this fight.
Yeah, they did
like little mini episodes of All Access, I think. I think they aired them on, I don't know if they aired them on Showtime or they just put them on YouTube.
I watched them on YouTube. They were good.
So they put a lot of promotion into this fight. You know, I mean, but I mean, like, what happens after this? Like, I know Clarissa Shields called out 154-pound undisputed champion Cecilia Breakhus. She said that she can move down to 154 and take that fight.
But she struggled to make 160.
Yeah. So
the WBC weigh-ins that you have to do,
yeah,
she failed every one.
Yeah, she did. Yeah. People were criticizing her for that. And she was just like, it doesn't matter as long as I make it like the day of or something like that. So, yeah, she had a tough time making that weight.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, well, can you make 154? But honestly, I think she beats Breakhus too.
I think she's going to be too young, too tough.
Yeah.
You know, because she can fight on the outside now with John David Jackson, and she could also rough it up. And she's pretty strong, you know, for an inside fighter.
Yeah.
But Cecilia Breakhus is, I think she's 13 years older than her. Yeah. So, you know, she's been around for a while, and she's kind of just lived off of the reputation that she's had. And she's too old now to be fighting someone, you know, as rough and as ready as that. You know, the other name she called out was Savannah Marshall from England, who's the only person to ever beat her in the amateurs. But she's...
Imagine she beat her in the pros that they fought. Like, oh, I got you again.
Savannah Marshall, though, you know, she's not had as many fights and she's not come as far as Clarissa Shields has yet. I would like to see that in the future when Savannah's had more time in the pros.
Yeah.
You know, Clarissa's, you know, she's jumped straight in.
She's a little more seasoned.
Exactly. So I think down the line, that'd be good. I don't know about fighting, you know, people like Katie Taylor, you know, Amanda Serrano. They're at a lighter weight, but, you know, catch weight somewhere.
No, you're right. You're right. So moving on. Also on Saturday from the Minneapolis Armory in Minneapolis, Minnesota on Fox Sports 1. Caleb Truax and Peter Kid Chocolate Quillen. What a weird fight this was. You know, it was a no decision because the Truax had a cut caused by an accidental headbutt. You know, I feel like there's always accidental headbutts. Yeah, at least 10 to 20 a year.
Just disappointing for those two because they're not getting any younger. They needed really to go in there.
Somebody needed that win.
Yeah. They were at a crossroads, both of them, really. They both kind of discussed it and said that they'd like to turn it back, you know, because they did, I think it was
where are they going to go from here? They're obviously going to turn it back.
That was an IBF eliminator.
It was. So they're obviously going to turn it back. Give them like 3 months, they're going to do it again.
I'll just say that again. That was an IBF
Eliminator.
For Peter Quinlan, who hasn't done anything in the last 2 years.
You're right. Yeah.
So how on earth has he got
his only loss was against Danny Jacobs.
I don't know.
And people picked him to win that fight, too. A lot of critics picked him to win that fight. And Jacob Stigato.
It's just so strange. The IBF are one of those people where you win their world title, they're like, okay, if you don't defend this title within 7 days, we're stripping you. But yet, Peter Quinlan can come out of nowhere fighting nobody for the last few years. And, oh, here's an IBF eliminator.
Well, I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of things that happen in the shadows of the sport.
They need to start running this stuff past me.
They do. Everybody's got to run their stuff past us at the last round over here. You know, we'll give you the right pathways to take in the sport of boxing. Also on that card, Sergey Dervishenko gets the unanimous decision win over Jack Kulke by scores of 116, 112 twice and 115, 113. I think Dervishenko is going to get a pretty significant fight either in the next two fights again. I mean, you know, when he fought Jacobs, he did pretty well. I mean, even though he lost, but he gave him a good fight.
He struggled in this fight, though. He didn't look, you know, before the Jacobs fight, he was kind of like the boogeyman, wasn't he? Oh, supposedly Triple G was avoiding him. Lou DiBella was building him up to be the next big thing. He goes in with Jacobs, did okay. You know, I think the right person won on the fight. I thought Jacobs did well. I don't know whether it's just Jack Kulke always seems to be in really boring fights. Because was it him that had a really terrible fight was it Andre Durrell?
Was it?
Last year. Probably one of the worst fights I've ever seen.
Excuse me.
I don't know whether it's just Kulke's style, whether he's really hard to look good against, or whether Dervishenko was just, we all bought into the hype.
That's what I think. I think it was the hype.
Yeah, this was definitely, you know, one where you'd end up playing on your phone halfway through the rounds because you could easily turn it off. It wasn't a great fight to watch.
I don't know, man. The Kulke style.
I don't know whether it's just him, yeah, because I've seen him a couple of times now and pretty terrible fights every time.
Also on Saturday, another DAZN card from the Arena Monterrey in Monterrey, Nuevo León, Mexico. There's your Spanish for
easy
your mic
to say.
On DAZN USA, 154-pound world titleist Jaime Munguia improves to 33-0 with a majority decision win. Very, very controversial. Majority decision win over Dennis Hulk Hogan, who suffers the second loss of his career. Munguia gets scores of 115, 113. There was also scores of 116, 112, and then a 114, 114. You know, I didn't catch this live. I saw some highlights. The ones that DAZN put out were a little bit more pro Munguia. But you caught it live, I think you told me. Or you told me that you caught enough of it where you told me that.
I watched it at work, but don't tell my boss.
I'm not going to say nothing. We'll edit that part out. But not only you, but other people, you know, other boxing personalities, journalists, and just fans saying, you know, my man Hulk Hogan probably should have deserved the W.
Yeah, I scored it about 7-5, 8-4 to Dennis Hogan. I thought he came out there with a great game plan of, you know, just trying to keep Munguia on his toes, keep him moving, don't let him plant his feet, because obviously, you know, one of the things that Munguia really relies on is being, you know, a lot bigger. A lot bigger than the people he's fighting. He just kind of outworks them.
Like Saddam Ali.
I give props to DAZN because from around 8 or 9, they were being honest and they were kind of saying that, you know, Munguia is going to have to start, you know, winning the last few rounds. And then it gets to the point in like round 10, 11, 12 where, you know, like Munguia's down on the cards. He's probably going to have to stop him. They weren't just going, you know, trying to convince the people who were watching, oh, Munguia's ahead. But you could kind of tell that, you know, he was fighting in Mexico. And if it was going to be close, you could see it, you know, the usual boxing of it's going to go to the home fighter. But Dennis Hogan did really well. I thought he clocked up the first few rounds. The middle rounds, he kind of, I don't know whether he took his foot off the gas knowing that Munguia was going to tire in the later rounds, because I gave the first few to Hogan, the middle rounds to Munguia, and then Hogan picked it up again in the later rounds and took all of those, in my opinion. He also caught Munguia and backed him up in the 10th, which was crazy to see because the other guy was so much bigger than him. Obviously, he didn't have the power to finish him off. But Hogan's corner afterwards said that they were going to campaign to the WBO.
They should.
And said that they want a rematch.
They should. I mean, everybody's got to remember that Munguia is still a young guy. He's a big kid, but he's young. He's got a world title, but, you know, he was just at the right place at the right time. He had, you know, Liam Smith didn't fight Saddam Ali, so they put Munguia in there, and he just dominated Ali because of his size was just too much. So, I mean, the thing I do appreciate is that ever since he's had the title, he's been extremely active. He has been fighting, regardless if he hasn't fought anybody like of significance in a sense.
Like six fights last year?
It was a lot. Yeah. So he has been fighting. So he's been essentially one of the most active, if not the most active world champion in the sport. But I get the criticism saying like, oh, well, he has a world title. He's going to have to fight, you know, high competition, high level competition, which is right. You know, he's right. So it's like, is he, I mean, who's he, are they going to rematch this? I wouldn't be surprised if they rematch this.
I think they'll try to avoid it because, like I touched on last week before the fight in the preview, obviously I thought Munguia was going to blow him out. I thought Hogan was going to be too small, but I think that they've got the wrong style for him. They're trying to make him more of a Oscar De La Hoya fighter, on your toes, boxing from the outside, where he's more of a walk them down pressure fighter. He's more of a Jarrett Hurd, who's in the same division as him. He's more of a Triple G type of fighter. I think they should tell, you know, Robert Alcazar, either you take what he's good at now, you take the fact that he's a big kid with power. You know, he's not going to have the best feet. You know, just try to get him so he can cut off the ring, he can pressurize them, he's got heavy shots, and just polish those skills, you know, and make him into that style of fighter. He's not, they're trying to change him too much, in my opinion. Try and make him, you know, fleet of foot, dance around the ring, make him stylish. That's not what he is. He's a knockout merchant.
Yeah.
He's just going to pressurize you, he's going to beat you down like Jarrett Hurd does.
Exactly.
And if he doesn't want to do that, if Robert Alcazar can't do that because that's not the style of fighters he is, then, you know, he's in Southern California. You've got Robert Diaz, you've got Joel Diaz, you can send him up to Abel Sanchez, Manny Robles, who, you know,
Robert Diaz trains people now? Golden Boys Robert Diaz is a trainer now?
That's breaking
news out here on the last round. Robert Diaz, matchmaker for Golden Boy Promotions, is now a trainer.
Oh, Robert Garcia. It could be Robert Garcia.
Yeah. Nah, man. Robert Diaz. That's how I'm going to start asking one. Next time we see him at a fight, I'm like, hey, man, I know you're in a training game. You're back. And then quick tidbit on the Munguia, one of the judges. Okay, I'm going to pronounce this. Walaska Roldan scored it 116-112 for Munguia and also scored it for your favorite fighter and mine, Jeff the Hornet Horn, 117-111 in his fight of the century win against Manny Pac-Man Pacquiao a couple years ago down under in Australia. So the judge is back again, Mr. Walaska Roldan.
If you look at BoxRec, it's pretty much home fighter win, home fighter win, home fighter win, home fighter win on the record.
That's where
it's at. Just putting that out there.
That's where it's at, man. Mm-hmm. Hey, but the Hornet, he got that W, so it doesn't matter. Don't worry about that. Moving on, fight previews. So this Saturday, the 20th, from the Madison Square Garden, the most famous arena in the world in New York, New York, on ESPN pay-per-view at a $69.99 price point here in the U.S. Pound for pound, great. Terrence Crawford puts his WBO welterweight world title again up against Amir the King Khan, 33-4. What do you think of this fight? You got to give credit to Khan, man. Regardless of people say he's chinny and he can't take a punch, this guy literally fights everybody. He does. He goes across the aisle and he fights people.
He does. I give him respect because, you know, like you say, he could have taken the easier route of fighting Kell Brook for, people say, a lot more money. But he took less money, a harder opponent, for legacy.
For a world title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's fighting one of the pound-for-pound greats with the world titles. You know, if Khan goes in there, the underdog, somehow, you know, managed to gets the win, then, you know, it's obviously going to go down on his legacy. I think it's going to be a closer fight than people think.
I think it is, too, and I hope it is.
Always remember the spectacular knockouts, because when Khan gets knocked out, he gets knocked the F out.
But he's always he's always in exciting fights, though.
But in all those fights, he's also always winning.
He gets Canelo.
Canelo, he was beating Canelo skill-wise, then got caught. Danny Garcia then got caught. I know, you know, he always said, in the recent interviews, he's kind of said that, you know, I've started to mature now. I've realized that I need to stick to the game plan. You know, when I'm winning, I get too confident. Or, you know, when they catch him, he's like, everything goes out the window. And he's like, okay, let's stand and fight.
Right.
He doesn't have the chin for that. I think it's going to be a closer fight. I still think Terrence Crawford will win. But I think it's going to be a closer fight than people who keep saying it's going to be a blowout. You know, people keep saying that Crawford's going to go in there and early on he's going to blow him out. But I'll tell you one thing I did, you know, kind of think is, what do you think TC has to do to make this fight deemed a success? Because everybody thinks he's going to win. If it goes late in the rounds, they're going to go, you know what? Terence Crawford isn't as good as we think.
Oh, yeah,
but if he goes in there and just blows him out round four, everyone's going to go, well, he should have done that. Card's got no chin.
Well, you're right. Yeah, I think it's a he's in a tough spot. Mm-hmm. He's between a rock and a hard place. So I don't know, man. I'm hoping Khan. I'm going to pick Crawford to win, but there's a big part of me that wants to see Khan just get that big win again. Get that one, that big, because he's showing it, man. People talk all this crap about him. Like, there's Twitter handles out there making fun of him, deluded Khan and stuff, which are hilarious. But I'm a fan, man. I'm a fan of Khan. I like the guy, and he's been showing his competitive side and his competition by fighting. He's always in big fights. I mean, going up to Canelo, like, and he signed with Al Haymon. So, and we know how difficult it is, especially with boxing politics, working across promotional lines. Like, Khan, like, you can't tell me that the PBC, Al Haymon, didn't tell Khan, like, no, don't, we don't want to go over there. Like, they didn't want to work with Top Rank or anything like that. Like,
well, but, he's with Matchroom now.
Well, he's with Matchroom, but he's still advised. I think he's still advised by Al Haymon.
This is his last, because he signed a 3-fight deal with Matchroom. Eddie Hearn.
Yeah.
And then I think this is his last one.
So,
because they were hoping it was going to be the Kell Brook.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that was a big money fight. They would have drew a big crowd over there in England. But yeah, Khan, like, I'm going to pick Crawford, but a big part of me wants to see Khan win because it'd be such a huge upset and such a big moment for the guy.
I kind of agree with you. You know, Khan comes across, you know, I spent time with him last time when he was his camp, when he was with the Guzin in Van Nuys, and he came across, he seems like a really genuine, nice guy. I think Crawford will win, but I think it will be late. I think he'll get to the point where they'll take, Ken O'Khan will take a bit of punishment. He'll eventually get caught because they'll be tired. And
yeah.
And I think, you know, Terence Crawford, like round 10.
Right. No, you're right. You're right. I mean, I don't know. I just hope he doesn't get knocked out. If he can at least make it to the whole 12 round decision, I'd hope that it works out. I really, you know, I don't know. A big part of me wants to see Khan win just for the celebration. Imagine that. Khan gets the world title, beats one of the pound-for-pound greats in the sport right now. He's like, I told you I did it. I'm the king. King Khan. I would love to see that. But Crawford's just a different animal, though. I hope it's really competitive.
This is his biggest fight, though.
It is. It is.
This is a step up from Benavidez.
Oh, yeah. It is. You know. But we'll see. Moving quickly down this line, Teofimo Lopez returns also on this card. 12-0, 10 KOs against Idit. Is it Idit? Tati? Tatlio?
Tatli, you were right the first time.
Tatli. Teofimo Lopez, you know, is expected to win. And then I'm sure he's, you know, after the fight, he's going to do his backflip, maybe that Fortnite dance again, and then probably talk about trying to get Lomachenko. So... also on that card, Shakur Stevenson goes up against Christopher Diaz. And I think you spoke to Christopher Diaz, right?
I saw him at the Staples Center. I spoke to him, asked him about how the training camp was going, and you'll be able to hear the audio coming in now. I'm here with Christopher Diaz, 24-1. He's fighting Shakur Stevenson next week on the Terence Crawford Amir Khan undercard. So, Chris, how's the training camp been?
A lot of hard work, you know. I always work hard for the fights. And now, you know, ready for fight Shakur Stevenson on April 20.
Do you think the release of the video from Shakur Stevenson in that fight, do you think that'll mentally, you know, affect him ready for the fight?
You know, I think so, yeah. He got to be more thinking about the problem because after the fight, maybe he's not fighting in 1 or 2 years. Because, the commissioner is going to suspend his license. I think so. So, you know, I just worry, like, he don't got nothing in the mind. I just going to bring the best fight that I can bring and grab the win.
Obviously, this is the biggest fight for Shakur Stevenson so far. You know, going into this, are you going to try and use that experience?
Yeah, for sure. That's one of the key. When they offer me the fight, I always say yes. You know, I always follow the lead of the promoters. They are the boss, you know. They offer me the fight. They ask for me. So, okay, let's do the fight.
Have you seen anything in, you know, his previous fights which you can exploit?
Yeah, you know, he fights a lot. He likes to box a lot. He likes to move. I think he's not gonna stop in the middle of the ring with me. He's just gonna move and not get caught with those big shots that I land. So in the end of the day, I'm just gonna make a great fight for the fans and for him too. So I'm gonna make sure that he said this is gonna be my hardest fight in my career.
All right, Chris. Thank you for your time and good luck next week.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
Okay.
Christopher Diaz. Imagine if he gets the upset against Shakur Stevenson. That'd be crazy, man. That'd be crazy. But, you know, wrapping up here on the last round. There's actually one more card. Quickly, on DAZN USA this weekend also as well from the O2 Arena in London. Dave Allen, Lucas Brown, heavyweight action. Also on that card, Derek Chisora and Sinad Gashi. And then Josh Kelly and Ronowski for the WBA International Welterweight title. That's also in DAZN. So a lot of boxing. You know, we can't complain, though. It's coming up every weekend. DAZN, ESPN, PBC, Showtime, Fox. It's all over the place. But once again, we'd like to thank our guest, heavyweight contender who fights this Saturday on Fox on the Danny Garcia, Adrian Granados undercard, Andy Ruiz Jr., who made it known he wants Anthony Joshua, that he messaged Eddie Hearn right after the Jarrell Miller news broke about the substance, testing positive for the substance, the banned substance. So that's breaking news. So if Ruiz gets it, you heard it here first on the last round, that he made his pitch to Eddie Hearn of Matchroom Boxing to get that fight. But, you know, anything else you want to add, Mike, before we wrap up here?
Just as I say every week, if you listen to us on iTunes, just go onto the podcast and just give us a review. The more reviews we get, the more exposure we are. Try and get up the ratings table.
More reviews, more exposure. Help us out. Help us out here at the last round. But once again, I'm Danny Z for Michael Shepherd. This is the last round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is